I wasn't sure how we should proceed, so I consulted about this, and I hope you agree that all we have left with the protection of personal information are three outstanding matters, that we should resolve those three, and once we've done that, if we approve of whatever we decide upon, then that means we've approved the deal. So our deliberations shouldn't take too long this morning. But that being the case, I'm going to deal with a few household matters. Judge Dennis Davis, next week we are meeting with the Human Rights Commission on Tuesday. Can we see Judge Davis on Wednesday? Honorable members?
Yeah.
Fine.
Okay. Great. That's done. I've received a request or an email from a member of the committee pointing out that the head of the acting head of the SIU has reappointed a senior staff member who had already been found, should I say, guilty in a disciplinary process.
Well, wasn't it disciplinary? The breach of the contract.
All right. The request is that the acting head be requested to appear and explain why this person has been reappointed. Can that proceed, honorable members?
Yes, sir.
Good. Then, as I'm sure some of you have had already, and Mr. Romano is one of those who's suffered, we've been deluged with requests by magistrates to come and address us. I think we should grant them their wish, but the further proposal is that we request the independent commission's presence as well. We understand they're independent, but I think it's important for us to understand how they reached their conclusions. And given the fact that the North Gauteng High Court has delivered a judgment, which you all have, trust you, right? Not yet, but still. Okay. So can we accede to the magistrate's request? Not just Joasa, but there are others as well who've been sitting on my neck. So if you can agree to that, that would be...
Sir, can this with the commission, maybe the secretary of the commission, because the chair, Judge Soretti, recuses himself on dealing with judges and magistrates' salaries, so he actually can't talk to us about the Joasa submissions. And I think we also need to be careful about how we interact with commissions, that we get information that we don't interrogate.
Sure, sure. I'm mindful of that. And I think, you know, ahead of that meeting, I was going to make the very point Mr. Jeffries made. So you're proposing it's the secretary?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, the secretary of the commission then is not a commissioner who is actually party to the decisions,
okay,
but somebody who would have knowledge of everything.
Okay.
The chair, I don't know, we've got on the agenda magistrates and judges' salary increases. So I think we obviously can't process magistrates any further, but will we be looking at judges? Because there's no submissions that have been made, and I would want to suggest that we do deal with the judges maybe after we finish dealing with the PPI stuff.
Do you want to do that after the PPI?
Maybe, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's fine. Yes. All right. We welcome back our sorry, Mr. Dupree. Honorable members, the FSB has sent us an email saying that they'll be attending this meeting. But this is the important word. They would like to make brief inputs on certain clauses. So I'm leaving it in your hands. Your responses, please, Mr. Jeffrey.
Yeah, maybe just to ask, can the person then from the FSB just briefly, quickly motivate for us?
Oh,
they're not here. No, I mean, Chair, look, really, I mean, we've had the FSB.
How many times?
How many times? Their last submission was that, I mean, it all relates to the issue of cross-border flows and their responsibility where there's a non-binding agreement. And the definition of accountability. And we're saying, and Treasury agreed with us, that they are responsible even if the other party goes and distributes the information. They want accountability to read. All we have to do is tell the person whose information we've managed to get distributed that we're sorry.
Yeah.
And I think that's not on. I mean, this bill is going to the NCOP. I think they should be told to go to the NCOP.
Not a bad idea, actually. Honourable members?
Yeah.
Well,
great.
Okay, great. Fantastic. Well, we welcome back
and
our...
And so the other point is that, I mean, from a communication point of view, they were advised on Monday, yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was Monday. It was Monday, we spoke on Monday. You told me you advised them on Monday to go to the chair.
To me?
To you, on Monday. And this SMS is coming from an official from the department.
They haven't been to me.
They, you know, protocol-wise, yeah.
They haven't been to me, yeah.
Yes, we received an email with a request that someone from the SMC signed up by the wording of my email was to the effect that we have received our final instruction.
Yes.
The committee intends to vote today and review thereof we recommend that the commission vote to the chair by
week. And that was on Monday.
Correct.
So they haven't contacted me. Mm-hmm. Just checking.
So you any indication as to what exactly they want? As what Mr. Jeffrey said, they want him that is not wanting to be at all accountable for
No, there's no indication from the email or SMS on Mr. Romano's one, other than to refer to two clauses. What particularly or specifically, no, they're not saying.
No, I mean, we can't, we have had a lot of time to discuss with them. They almost seem to be trying to badger the committee into what we should put in the legislature, and I don't think that's perfect.
Well, they can approach the NCOP,
and
of course this is Section 75.
Sorry, Chair, I received the second part of the request for the requested amendment enforcement to 18 to legislate that the NCOP often requires to share information with other regulators for regulatory services and not merely for inspection.
That's it. All right. We welcome back our world travelers.
Oh, do good work.
We trust that you enjoyed your trip. All right, honourable members, we have three outstanding matters.
Okay. Actually, sorry, I was talking about two, but then a third one arose.
Okay, fair enough. I had thought there were four. So
I might have left out number.
Jeffrey reminded me that no, there's three. But all right.
I think we should just try to finish this morning.
No, once we've finalized the bill, it's finalized.
Chair, yes, and in that regard, I must start off by apologizing, Chair. I would just like, before we get to the issues, I'd like to point out a few pictures.
Okay.
See, you're allowed. Who is Mr. Prepared to talk? He's the one who keeps pointing out.
No, but he's allowed. I mean, in terms of our process, as part of his work, he's got to go through it, and if he finds stuff, brings it to our attention. So,
Thank you.
Just also
one other thing. I think
we're going to start
every meeting with input. Before I start, I just want to apologize.
You're
very apologetic,
sir.
Now,
boys,
calm down.
Take us to the
clause 4 to A. We would like to recommend that paragraph A should be as follows: included in terms of section 6 or 7 on the operation of the
Act.
And then on at the bottom of the page here, clause 5, you will note that before paragraph A there, the words including the right. And then paragraph E on the next page just starts with the words personal information. We would like to recommend that we insert the words of immediately after E to object to the processing of his, her, or its personal information.
E and then before personal information, so he has the right to object.
And then we would like
to
certainly, so it will be paragraph E, to object to the processing of his, her, or its, and then personal information. And then in paragraph E2, Chair, we would like to recommend that we should delete the words section 69.1b read with. And then it will be in terms of section 69.3, and then we should insert the reference to paragraph C. So it will be, Roman 2 will again read in terms of section 69.3C.
Because 69.3 is already subject to
1C Roman 2, the outdated wording, to the extent that adequate safeguards have been established in, we must just omit the black words, the word in brackets.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Chair, there was just one other place, page 15, that was 15.3E. Reads currently as follows: the information is used for historical statistical research purposes, and the responsible party ensures that the further processing is carried out solely for such purposes and will not be published in an identified form. We would like to recommend that the word identified rather be replaced with identifiable.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. And then, Mr. Chair. I'm just pointing it out to you. It's a very small thing, but clause 26, the word concerning, and I'll just be out there. So we'll fix that for you.
I see.
Yes, sir.
Must just be shifted in.
Yes, sir. Shift out, sir.
Out.
To the larger. Yes, sir.
Like the apply on 25.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I don't agree with that.
He wants
a weird thing. I don't know if it's good to put that in the vote. Clause 41A, Roman 5, on page 24. We once again have the proposed words with or without the request. And we would like to suggest that Roman 5 should be providing advice, comma, upon request or on its own accord. And then omit the words with or without the request. Clause 41A, Roman 5, on page 24.
We've got the two page numbers.
Yeah,
my apologies, clause 41. 41A, Roman
5.
41A. 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 41A.
or on its own accord.
Upon request.
Yes, you will, remember, sir, that at the previous meeting we had a similar wording in this clause, which were amended.
Yeah.
So it was just an unfortunate oversight.
Yeah.
Or on its own accord.
Yes. Yes, yes, and then clause 44.3, the last line of that sub-clause 3, that the regulator must have particular regard for the lead to the things.
Okay.
The letter. Yeah, I think that is it.
Yeah, well look, it's just from another drafting. I mean, my understanding of the outstanding issues that were left over from last time was clause 7 and the non-code instrument. And then the application of exemptions for 72, the cross-border flows. I don't know if there were any more. Those are the two that I have noticed as being outstanding. There is, though, the other issue of under the schedule and the amendments prior, and maybe I'll start with that one, was that my understanding is that it was our intention that you must you apply, the person applies for information under PIA, you must go for the internal appeal, and then you have a choice as to whether to go to the regulator or to court. But the wording, it's been pointed out that the wording of the amendment, it would be I think the one on page 72, is that you have to wait for you have to go to the regulator first. So it's basically a line, a straight road that you follow, stopping at each of the stop streets, rather than you stop at the stop streets of the application, the internal appeal, and then after that the road can
branch,
and you can go to court straight, or you can go to the regulator and then to court after the regulator. The leading is a one road.
I confirm that people should have, that was our agreement, that people should have the choice of going to the regulator or to court. And in fact, originally people had a triple avenue, which I think rather explains the heading that we find at the bottom of page 71. originally people, at one point we thought, should have a choice of doing either the internal appeal or the regulator or the court. Whether the heading that remains is the result of that earlier view, I'm not sure. But if you will look at your heading, applications regarding decisions of information officers or relevant authorities, or public bodies, or the same, or private. Now that's already surely not correct. Surely we should be talking about, we should be dropping the information officers now. And then the mischief seems to come in at the very end of the of 78.1 at the top of page 72. Through the reference at the very end of that sentence to 77A. It is that reference to 77A that creates a situation where people first have to exhaust the regulator. So we need a little redraft.
Yes, Chair, thank you. Chair, we have had the request this morning. I don't know whether we should, we haven't had the opportunity to put it on paper for you. So we can either read it out or
let me hear it.
Yes, Chair. Chair, maybe just to answer the first question first, with regard to the heading itself, I think the heading is perfectly in order. Even the current heading, we must remember that internal appeals are only compulsory with regard to what we call the hardcore public So strictly speaking, with regard to your other category. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Right. We would like to propose and it requires a bit of redrafting and bringing back provisions which are embedded here as being deleted. But Chair, we would like to propose that subclause 1, 78.1 should be as follows. The request of third party may only apply to court for appropriate relief in terms of section 82 in the following circumstances. In colon, paragraph A, after that requested of third party has exhausted the internal appeal procedure referred to in section 24. And then semicolon. Or B, after that requested of third party has exhausted the complaints procedure referred to in section 77A. Then78.1 will then be amended as follows. To read as follows. The requester or third party may only apply to court for appropriate relief in terms of section 82 in the following circumstances. Go on, paragraph 8. After that requester or third party has exhausted the internal appeal procedure referred to in section 74, semicolon 4, paragraph B. After that request of third party has exhausted the complaints procedure referred to in section 77A. Then, Mr. Chair, if we look at 78 sub 2 on that page, we simply have to see how we're going to make issues for ourselves. Subsection 2 remain as it is. So all those amendments will not be affected except for a paragraph E to be inserted in subsection 2, which will then read as
C, replace C with no E, so you take out N D.
What I wanted to say is that sub 2 will remain as it is.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So the only amendment is an insertion of a paragraph E.
Yeah.
Is it an E or a C?
Going to
be a C.
So what I understand is it would be rejecting all these amendments.
No.
Okay.
So you keep two as it was. So all the black comes back and
comes back in.
Yeah.
Misunderstood.
But
this
The paragraph E will then read that is agreed by any decision of the information register. And then subsection 3, exactly the same thing, Chair. It remains as it is currently in the Act. And paragraph D will be inserted in subsection 3. Where the wording is the following, that is agreed by any decision of the regulation regular.
Are we
happy with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Chair, then it goes to the issue of the non-code journalists. Ms. Lowe did send me a draft yesterday, which was, well, it was fine. I don't know, if I'm not sure why they're not submitting that. The issue basically was what they put into the bill that's before us is putting the non-coded journalists under clause 7 and making clause 7 exclusion for journalistic, literary or artistic. They put artistic,
Does this deal with the other journalists?
Yes.
Okay. which one? Jeffrey. Or Mr. Slow?
Pink.
All right.
No,
just motivate.
Let me just deal with the thing, because I was raising it. The issue was around the journalists who are not subject to a code, who I've been calling the non-coded journalists, just because it sounds amusing. Us politicians like to find journalists funny sometimes. Anyway, the issue was journalists not subject to the code, what happens to them? And what was discussed in the previous meeting was a provision that they would be able to, the journalists not subject to a code would be able to, some provisions relating to them getting a code, which was under section, I lost it, that was 65, okay. That was agreed to last time. There were provisions for how the regulator should deal with complaints, and that was under the point of where was it? Matters that the regulator had to take into account.
That was 44,
wasn't it? So that was 44, and that was agreed to in the last meeting. But the issue then was which we didn't resolve and we left it over to be looked at, was specific reference to journalists not subject to a code. Now, in the document before you was a proposal from Ms. Lowe, which was to take out the journalistic, literary or artistic, take out literary or artistic expression, that clause which was under 6, if you remember, before the 6 exclusion.
Yeah.
Put it under 7, and obviously then change the title to exclusion for journalistic, literary or artistic purposes, and provide then under a 7.1a and b. B is the old wording of the journalist, the coded journalist. And then A would include basically all journalists, and it would be the same test as literary or artistic expression. So an exclusion, to the extent that such an exclusion is necessary to reconcile as a matter of public interest the right to privacy with the right to freedom of expression. She'd shown that to me. I felt it was a little bit unclear in terms of you have effectively two exclusions. What it effectively means is that for the journalists who are not subject to a code, the regulator can deal with complaints as to whether this test of basically reconciling the right to privacy as a matter of public interest, the right to privacy with the right to freedom of expression. The journalists under a code, though, are effectively excluded from the application of the Act or the jurisdiction of the regulator. So if you have a complaint against such a journalist, you would follow the procedures outlined in the code. And all the regulator can do is basically, under the two in this, to evaluate the code itself, not actually deal with a complaint. I just felt it wasn't that word well, it's a bit unclear. And hence you've then got the document from the drafters, which is in front of you, the single page, where effectively one and two have been, A and B have been made into one and two. Three remains as it was, and it's then some rewording on A and B.
The intention
was to make it read clearer, so you don't have somebody looking at it for the first time and not having a clue as to what this exclusion for journalists is all about.
Generally, it's good to trust as well to spell it out, because the last one I saw, which I think was Monday, I lose track, was simply the addition of the word such code applies to the exclusion of this act. Now, in addition to that, Fernando has now added in what will happen. She's added in such a code will apply to the processing considered to the exclusion of this act and any alleged interference with the protection of the personal information of a data subject that may arise must be adjudicated as provided for in terms of that code. We might as well spell the whole damn thing out. So one tells you complaints can go against non-coded journalists. Two tells you that they will go to the press ombud or whatever other institution they now create. So this is satisfactory.
I'm concerned that they're unsubject to occur, and what limitations are there on who qualifies as journalists?
I mean, I can call myself a journalist, and I've
made
terrific
stuff online, and
go around taking pictures of my cell phone.
The point is that what we're doing now will actually have the effect of encouraging online journalists to start creating a code under the DMMA or jointly with the new press structures, because their lives will be easier. But this does not address, it's the problem I raised up when Stefan Brimmer first brought this to us, saying it's just fashionable to call somebody a journalist. Calling yourself that doesn't make you a journalist. I mean, these people are actually sources as far as I'm concerned. And I think how this does cater for that problem is through the fact that the regulator will be able to take complaints. If somebody takes a complaint, to use that very good example the Honourable Jeffrey created of the so-called citizen journalist or any person out there with a monopoly, creating a list of people who have had abortion. Now, if somebody takes that complaint to the regulator, the person is then in his net. So I don't think that this has the effect of elevating someone who doesn't deserve the prescription journalist. What happens is quite simply that if somebody abuses personal data, the complainant can go to the regulator, who will then apply this test and obviously deal with the person appropriately if in fact he has infringed on people's privacy. So I think it is about as good a resolution that you can get. But it also applies to others, like the better example Mr. Brimmer later gave, the more persuasive one, the freelance journalists who file abroad. If they don't happen to belong to, sit under a code, then this could assist them. Alternatively, they too will be encouraged to become coded journalists. So I think the overall effect, this is about what one can do. And I think the overall effect will be beneficial.
Are freelance journalists exempt from the code?
Well,
they don't have the code.
No, just to clarify, I mean, we haven't this. First, it's not journalists. It's journalistic expression.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's the activity. We haven't defined that as we haven't defined literary or artistic expression. And those I'm sure would be subject to considerable debate. But the exclusion, I mean, to some extent it's not an exclusion, because it is an exclusion to the extent that it's necessary to reconcile the right to privacy with the right to freedom of expression. It's the regulator that would be adjudicating over that. There's also the test under 44.3, which is in determining whether the processing of personal information for exclusive journalistic purposes by a responsible party who, by virtue of office, employment, or profession, is not subject to a code of ethics, constitute interference. The same as look at the regulator have regard to the factors referred to in 7, well, it's now 7.3,
okay.
A to D. So there's also that element. But basically, the intention is that the journalist not subject to a code would be subject to the regulator. So if Ms. Schaefer gets the bright idea one day to, or she feels it's particularly expressive, decides to express her expression in journalistic terms and run around peeping into people's windows and taking photographs of them, then that matter should be taken to the regulator for both those tests.
And we would apply A through D.
Right. Any further comments?
There's nothing new in the substitute.
Yeah, then 44 must be right at the end. That must change to 73.
Yeah. And then if we agreed on that, the other issue was which then arose sort of consequently was, I mean, I felt to some extent we dealt then with journalists. Coded or otherwise, but the issue I was then worried about was the question of historical, statistical and research purposes, and particularly the application of Clause 72 to them, the trans-border information flows. There is provision under Clause 57 for the regulator to exempt responsible parties processing for historical, statistical or research activity. What hysterical? historical, statistical or research activity. And my reading of 57 was that it only applied to the conditions, which are the conditions in chapter 4. And I was therefore concerned that academics, researchers, whatever,
mm-hmm.
may have difficulty sending, let's say you're a student at some foreign university doing masters, doing a doctorate, and you're sending off your thesis, which contains sort of personal information, which is for research purposes. Ms. Lowe's view was that no, 57 applied to the whole bill, if you look at Clause 8, which is the first condition, and that is a responsible party must ensure that the conditions set out in this chapter, and then, and this is the important bit, all the measures that give effect to such conditions are complied with.
Okay.
And then 72 would be a measure that gives effect to such conditions. So her feeling was that all the provisions 72, and in fact the provisions under for the direct marketers could also be exempted in some form by the regulator. And she's also sort of got a bit of a constitutional argument about the necessity of that. That if we don't, we may be making things too narrow. Now, I don't have a problem with that happening, but my problem, though, is that it's not clear. I mean, I had always read 70, clause 70, 71, 72, as standalone. I hadn't read them as giving the regulator having any powers to exempt. I can see Ms. Lowe's construction, but we obviously want to pass a law that is clear, so I think we need to make it clearer. And what I then suggested to Ms. Lowe and Mr. Dupria was either under 37.1 that we use the same wording as in clause 8, so the regulator may grant an exemption to the responsible party to process information, even if that processing is in breach of a condition, and then the wording from 8, or the measures that give effect to such conditions, or we say in a breach of a condition, or the provisions of effectively it would be chapter 8 and chapter 9. And I'd raise those as two proposals, but I think that's just the way of background. Maybe they can then take it from there.
Mr. Chair, the long and the short of it is that we had a look at it this morning, and we would like to, with regard to clause 37.1, propose the following thing. And I'll read the clause for you and then indicate to you where we insert the wording. The regulator may, by notice in the Gazette, grant an exemption to the responsible party to process personal information, even if that processing is in the condition of the processing of such information, and then you insert or any measure that gives effect to such condition. And then if the regulator is satisfied that
this is of no harm. I must say that another construction I found persuasive the first time I checked it out. But it never does any harm to the
I don't know on what capacity this must. I mean, the issue is the issue. I mean, she herself thought it was yes. And your former classmate, what is your judge? And we can now add Bertelsmann to the list.
Really?
And
that one
which
I
haven't
had. Yeah, I'm happy with that wording.
Okay.
Good.
Absolutely.
Good. Right. Anything else?
Thank you, Chair. May I just repeat one more time, Chair, for clarity purposes. The regulator may, by notice in the Gazette, grant an exemption to a responsible party to process personal information, even if that processing is in breach of a condition for the processing of such information, comma, or any measure that gives effect to such condition, comma, if the regulator is satisfied that in the interim.
Committee members, are we happy with that? Good. What else is there, Jeffrey?
Can I propose the bill as amended?
Six.
No. Here's your mic.
Oh, okay.
I'm not recognizing you, I'm just allowing you to speak.
Where do I press here? You see? Thank you, Kenneth. Are we? We from the Financial Services Board. My name is Nongu Chombe. We came through the course. We received a communication from Mr. Hank Dupree, and also we had sight of the minutes of the committee. We were concerned about some of the two sections that we have discussed with the committee before. That is clauses 38 and 72, I think it is now. I don't know if it's in the ninth draft, it's still 72, but it was the previous clause 77.
What about that?
If I may then go ahead.
No, wait.
You know, we appreciate the work FSB is doing. The work FSB is doing is no less and no more important than other state structures. I'm given to understand that you were informed of this on Monday, and you decided that on Monday you would approach me. You have not approached me at all. No one from the FSB has approached me. No one from the FSB has approached me. Let me finish. Mr. Romano, who's the committee secretary, only received, I'm not sure if it's an email or an SMS, this morning, just before the meeting was due to start. Now, we cannot hold back this piece of legislation any longer. It's been in the pipeline since 2009. If you look at the bottom of the home, it says the 2009. Now, we have a responsibility. And from time to time we are asked, you've had this on your agenda since 2009. When do you intend wrapping it up? Now, since 2009, I may be wrong, but you've only approached this committee since I've become chair. What have you been doing since then? Now, we're in the process of finalizing this phone this morning. When we last met, this committee agreed that we considered the positions and the proposals you put before us. Some of them were agreed to, others were not. It does not mean that because the FSB approaches with justice before the court, that everything it asks for, the FSB will receive. And so on that basis, we proceeded, and now there were just three outstanding matters that had nothing to do with the FSB. We have now finalized those outstanding matters. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, let me apologize for being late this morning. Our flight was delayed, and it was beyond our control. Secondly, Chair, we, at the FSB, we received the communication with respect to the amendments and the proposals that were put forward by Mr. Dupree on Monday. And promptly on Tuesday, we sent through, the only reason that we responded was because we needed to clarify, Chair, the exactly what it is that is being said by the FSB, because we thought that reading through Mr. Dupree's submission, there may have been areas that needed to be clarified. And we sent through all of that communication to National Treasury yesterday. And our understanding is that we do not communicate with the committee directly. We communicate with the committee via National Treasury, who are the owners of all our legislation. And at this point, Chairman, I hear you to be saying that the bill, the committee has sort of finalized this work. We were not aware, we were actually made to understand that we could come through, which is why we sent through our submission yesterday to National Treasury, and we were also made to understand that we could come through today and clarify what we sent through yesterday, which we understood Mr. Mamonia to be saying he would communicate directly with you, the chairperson. We are unfortunately in that position, Chairperson, and it is not because we do not appreciate the work of the committee, but we're not in control in the way that we perhaps should be.
I hear what you're saying, and I'm going to tell you what I told committee members when this matter was raised at the start of this meeting. No one from Treasury is contacting me at all. So I'm afraid you've undertaken a wasted trip, and you'll have to
put it down to wasteful expenditure, I suppose. You know, I don't know what our response would have been if Mr. Mamoni had contacted me. Probably would have been the same. That we're at that point now in our consideration of the bill where we can't any longer hold it back for reasons that I've already explained.
Okay, just, while I was sitting in the meeting, I got an SMS from Mr. Mamoniat. Shall I read it?
Mm.
Okay. Sorry for contacting you so late. I wanted to alert you that the FSB still has some concerns about the current wording of clauses 38 and 37 of the Protection of Personal Information Bill, which have been raised with HINC. They will be there today should you be open to hearing them. I have to attend another FinCom meeting, but can be called to pop in if the committee has any queries. So that's at 9:04, what is interesting is that it's not Treasury concerns, it's FSB concerns, and it was quite clear about they'll be there should you be open to hearing from them. I think one point to note is that whilst the wording of clause 72, or the new 72, has changed after, I mean, there was a meeting with the FSB a month ago. Okay, so that's 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
All right. The clause 38 that we have in our bill is the clause 38 that was tabled at that meeting.
Yes.
It's the clause 38 that was tabled.
Yes.
Subject
to, you were asked to comment, but I don't think any comment was received by from you on 38.
There were our comments.
We sent through our comments and
yes. When was that?
To Treasury. Can I just explain this? Although the concerns and the bill is for the operations of the FSB, the FSB is an agency that operates under National Treasury as a government department, and the FSB does not have, at least insofar as I know and that I understand, does not have the authority to communicate directly with this committee.
We've
the FSB communicates with this
yeah.
committee via
Treasury
National Treasury.
Treasury has not raised that with us.
And just to say, with regard to Section 38, the only concern was that it did not include clause 15 in the clauses that it lists for exemption, so to speak.
It does.
And then the second concern was that it needed to also talk to the exercise of statutory authority. The reason for that has been that the FSB also, apart from acting as a public body in the public interest, it also operates as a regulator with other regulators. Can I quote an example? With respect to the five, for instance, area. The FSB and the Council for Medical Schemes have to share information because the accreditation, and this is in terms of the FSB Act, not the FIFE Act, for accreditation purposes, because FSBs that are accredited by the FSB and vice versa, by the Council for Medical Schemes, are then able to be recognized for purposes of the one act or the other. That's just one example. So in Section 38, our feeling is that because there's a comma after the word law, there's a comma. So if you look at Section 38, 1,
2B.
Yes. 2B, mm-hmm. yes. It then means that A, in the which is public, public body, what appears after the comma, the Romans 1 and 2, they apply to A as well. Now that means that FSB will only be exempted if it's doing what appears in Romans 1 and 2. Whereas there are these other instances where the FSB is acting as a regulator with other regulators, and that's why we're saying that the addition of or the amendment of A to say in the exercise of statutory authority would cover our concern. Failing which, then we simply remove the comma after law in B. After public.
We have built. Okay, look, I mean, this is the 38 that was tabled 3 weeks ago. Okay. 38, you will recall, gives you an exemption from certain conditions, which you actually had not been asking for. All right? It was more than what you wanted. But it's a very specific exemption. I mean, the medical aid schemes, in fact, Chair, wanted an exemption from the Act as well. But I mean, it's you know, they need to look after their personal information. That's the bottom line. You know, so I don't know why they thought that they should get an exemption. But basically, if you're not covered by 38, you must follow all the conditions. And 38 gives an exemption from 11, 12, 15, and 18, which is for those specific circumstances. If you're not exempted there, you must get a you must then follow all the conditions or apply to the regulator for an exemption under 37.
Yeah.
And we've dealt with it, Chair. And I think, you know, just maybe one sort of shot as well on the thing. FIC, Financial Intelligence Center, had concerns with the bill. Very, very early on, they ensured that they had them discussed them, in fact, with the drafters who came to us with proposals, and their concerns were dealt with. I know the FSB has been trying to rope the FIC in and claim that the FIC is also unhappy, but I've seen nothing to say that the FIC is unhappy, because some of the documentation from the FSB has been using the name of the FIC. But Chair, I think the bottom line is that we've finished. If the FSB is not happy, well, the bill will be going to the National Council of Provinces. I suggest they make their submissions there. But in following the sort of protocol of going through their accountable department, we would have expected Treasury, as they did the first time with you, if you remember, to come and say, these are our concerns which the FSB has raised with us. At the moment, and the SMS from Mr. Mamoniat confirms it, they're just passing the buck. But Chair, I really think the FSB, as we discussed earlier when the FSB were not here, again, you don't just arrive without checking whether you can come. I don't know how you work, actually. Chair, I think we had decided earlier that we were not going to hear the FSB.
I just want to clarify, the committee did discuss the further submissions that they brought in, and the only decision that was taken at that stage is in terms of 99 civil remedies, is that FSB was actually excluded in terms of being included in the claims against the action of damages. So that had the effect that, as they explained, that people in the rules are very litigious in nature, and that they wouldn't then be subject to the civil remedies in 99. I think that was the decision taken with regard to the last submission that they actually made. So 99 was actually the one to make the
okay.
And we also included 15 in the 38 sub 1. Effectively now we're giving you the hearing that we decided you shouldn't have. And as Mr. Jeffries pointed out, you do have a second bite of the cherry, as does everyone else. When the National Assembly approves this bill, which will take place in the next week or two, you can approach the NTOP like everyone else. But just
just a friendly word of advice. You really, really need to get your act together. You can't hop on a plane on a Wednesday morning and say we're going to speak to the without having clarified whether everything is in order. You say you sent your stuff to Treasury. Did you check with Treasury whether they had confirmed that you could appear? You didn't. You couldn't have, because if you had, Momo would have said to you, no, I haven't. Because he only sent his SMS, there was the Jeffrey confirmed, 9:04.
We really apologize for inconvenience.
It doesn't help apologize.
But we have received confirmation from Treasury that we were
I want to see the confirmation.
There was an email communication. Actually, we had a copy of the email.
We should attend the
committee meeting today and to raise our concerns with the committee.
Because you've heard Mr. Jeffrey. You read out Mr. Momonia's SMS at 9:04. So I'm amazed that he could confirm to you, or someone in Treasury could confirm to you, that you could get on a plane and come here when he's only going to approach us at 9:00. How does that work? Do you see what I'm saying?
And Chair, Mr. Momonia's SMS is not please hear them. It is that they will be here today should you be open to hearing them.
So you see, should you be open to hearing them? So first consider, do you want to hear them? Yes or no? So despite that, you still hop on a plane and come here.
Okay, let me hear you. Thank you. Chair, I think we appreciate the time that we've been given. With regard to 38, Chair, we've got only one major issue with 38 is that we
are we hearing these things or not? I mean, I think we've made it clear that we have discussed it. The door is not closed on the bill, in that the NCOP could consider permission. And yet, why are we then continuing to hear input?
You see, madam, because once you're done, someone else will walk in the door and say, hang on a second, I've got an issue here. Then what does this committee do? Can you see what I'm saying? I mean, you're important. The FSB, we grant you that. But then there are other people just as important. And at some point, we have to draw a line and say, okay, we've heard everyone now. Let's move on. And that's what we've done. If we didn't have three outstanding matters, nothing to do with you, we would have approved the bill last week. And then what would you have done?
Can we raise our issue then on 72?
Chairman, thank you. All I wanted just to clarify for the chair and for the committee is that indeed we did not just climb a plane and come here. We after the committee's meeting on the 14th of August, we sent through all the inputs that we were required to send.
To Treasury?
Yes, Treasury. And that's where we have to send it. And then, having done that, we didn't hear anything. Only until Monday this week that we received a communication that said that the proposals that were put in were not acceptable. And that was contained in a submission that was prepared by the Secretary. And part of that proposal is what I've already explained, and the second part was about the definition of the word accountable chair. And as I recall, the committee had decided that yes, accountable should not mean liable. And we had put wording there that clearly shows accountability as opposed to liability chair. And we were hopeful that the committee would at least consider the wording that we are talking about, because
we did consider. You're going on a go. We didn't even look at your submission. We just threw them out of the window. That didn't happen. We considered your positions very seriously and very carefully, diligently. But it doesn't mean that because the FSB or Stefan Skrumer or anyone else comes to this committee and makes a point, that this committee is simply going to accept it, holus bolus. it doesn't happen that way. Do you understand what I'm saying? There are elements of your submission that were accepted, but there were others that were rejected. That is the way the system works.
Okay. What we did receive was a submission by Mr. Dupree where he was disagreeing with our proposal. So we did not know that the committee had actually had an opportunity to consider the wording. And we sent through, you know. So it is very important to us for this committee to understand that we have not acted irresponsibly.
All right, fine.
We take your word for that.
I've asked Mr. Romano to make copies of that email so that committee members have it in their possession. Because really, what I've heard this morning, I'm quite amazed by it. Honestly. Because Mr. Dupree and Mrs. Lowe were saying, have they contacted you? They're supposed to contact you on Monday. And I said, no one has contacted me. So what do I do under the circumstances?
At the risk of sounding like a broken record, Chair, indeed, we contacted you via National Treasury.
They didn't contact
the only way. This is the only way that we can contact you.
National Treasury did not contact me. So, all right, Mr. Jeffrey, and then talking about it.
I mean, I think jumping on a plane to come here when we don't know whether we consider the submission or not, I would see as irresponsible. I mean, it's relatively easy to check whether what happened at the committee meeting. You could go to the PMG, the latest mixed use website. You could check with the committee secretary. Formally, you may have to consult with the treasury, but informally, you can do other things. And we did consider your amendment to 72 and your definition of accountability, which, quite frankly, I thought was. Inadequate. Yeah, that might be.
Right,
I mean, basically, it was basically that you wanted accountability just to mean that the party to the non-binding agreement releases the information, and all you've got to do is notify the data subject and say sorry. You do have an exemption from liability, from civil liability, but what you wanted, we considered. Does it? I sort of find this a bit of sort of badgering, in fact, you know, where we don't accept something and then we've got to, you know, put up with the person coming again, raising the same points. We consider it. And I don't think it's appropriate that I do feel it's badgering. You know, why can't you accept that we considered it and accept that? That is the legislative process outlined in the Constitution. The FSB doesn't have legislative powers.
All right. Thank you. Yes. So, as amended, honourable members, I'm required to put to you the vote for that amendment.
There used to be something Czech called a motion of desirability. And after 3 years of having this bill, I don't think we need to pass a motion that it's desirable to pass it.
Well, we've done away with it for one reason. I liked it.
Yeah.
All right. I put the bill to you, honourable members. Moved by Ms. Smut, seconded by Ms. Pilani Majake. All in favour?
Okay.
Anyone against? None against. Thank you.
No.
She's not at stake.
Some parties' records were spoken here and then in the House.
She's not at stake. Yeah, I wanted to say something about that, but I thought we should leave it at where Mr. Jeffrey had. All right. Honourable members, do you have a copy of the draft report? All right, let me just hear. Have you all got these two documents?
The
Polish may not be here. Do you want to go?
No. I just wanted to find out whether we have it, like, for the sake of reading the book.
Oh, Mr. Dupree, you seem to be in a hurry.
Not at all, Peter. I just need to, do a few things. And
There's a thing called a programming committee. They decide these things. And in addition to that, there's the 3-day rule.
My understanding is that it's provisionally for the 11th, which is next Tuesday.
Provisionally.
Basically, there are some problems in that our programming works rather passed away, so she's been out of action. It's goodbye. But my understanding is that it's provisional. I think it would be subject, I don't know if they've checked for the availability of the minister, the deputy minister, but it's down for provisionally the 11th at this point.
Okay. Doesn't mean you can go.
We've got the report to.
Have you got this?
Yeah.
And what is all right.
I took the liberty to just make some improvement. I mean, I think there are others that could still be made, but that it now serves the purpose. I just very specifically inserted reference to the EU Data Privacy Directive of 1995 and other international instruments that have a bearing on our trade relations, and pointed out that we believe that we have achieved compliance with that. Because the original draft had simply reference to new developments under the EU's legislation, and that we thought we might have maybe taken some of them on board. But I mean, the central point is what I put in here, the compliance with the 95 Data Privacy Directive, and then I retained proposed changes to the EU's legislation on data privacy have also been taken into account as far as practicable. And I did a few other things which I don't recall, but which I thought were necessary.
And they're all in paragraph 2, eh?
No. Also paragraph 1, I made a slight improvement.
What's on the table is
mine.
No, we have two documents.
All right.
But it is two, but yeah.
You're not looking at the other document.
I beg your pardon. Mine's two at the top.
Well, you need
and
to look
I simply, all right, I simply in paragraph 1
yes.
Inserted reference to giving effect to the constitutional right to privacy while still allowing for the free flow of information.
Right.
I think that's just about all. I might have done something in 5. No, I don't
think I did it in 5. I didn't. There's something in 3. 3. Because the number is there. Yes. 3 is...
Cut something out because
I've
got...
You need to read your document with the other one this month. Then you'll be able to see where the differences lie, which is what we're doing.
Oh, she's put. I can see what she's done. I mean, I just suggested
this month that she discover the track changes function on the computer. She's instead of writing, the committee has deliberated lengthily and changed it to it at great length.
I think the introduction in 2009 is also important this month. I must agree. Why are you taking that out?
Because the grammar is wrong. You don't say introduced in 2009.
No, we hear you, but
yeah.
The fact that it was introduced in 2009 should form part of the report.
I don't care, happily. The committee has deliberated at great length on the bill which was introduced.
So
it just doesn't make sense to say introduced in 2009.
Sure,
the committee has deliberated.
No, it's the email to Treasury. Ms. Silkstone?
I was just looking under paragraph 5.
Mm-hmm.
I referred to the chairperson, or the report referred to the chairperson, and then as Walter put in a home of information maybe later. And I'm just wondering whether we actually need to refer to the chairperson.
Well, I envisage that in addition to the chairperson. Okay. Do you want to take that out?
Yes.
So it should read, this bill envisages that there will be a permanent member.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying, Christine?
It's
okay.
Agreed, yes.
Because there's
also a permanent member,
the
right
to the
Mr.
Dupree? If I might, just possibly
two small questions.
Well, I think I'll offer to report this
We haven't even heard you.
You have to
say it first before you.
The heading, I think the form of due place to reply.
So, sorry, where are you?
Oh, yeah.
Four, September.
Oh, yeah.
Must be five. Yeah.
And then in paragraph 2, the second sentence, the word committee.
Yes.
And then maybe just a general observation change, not necessarily the recommendation, but if you look at paragraph 2, the use of personal data, one wonders whether one shouldn't rather be aligned to our legislation that refers to personal information instead of data.
Yeah.
All
right.
And presumably consumer information, I mean data to be information. But then, presumably, what is the one at the bottom, proposed changes to the EU's legislation on data privacy, that would remain data, because that's their wording.
Okay. Anything else? They do give the full name of the
yes,
law.
Yes, it's becoming
the norm, eh?
It's becoming the norm, but just to preempt, Chair, the PPI Act must not ever please be referred to as the poppy because it's either a background or something that you should never
have. I have
check.
To agree with Mr. No, I agree with you. I think it's a horrible and awful evil.
It is disrespectful.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe I know we voted on the bill, but we haven't supported yet. I mean, we might want to insert a clause of this bill shall be known by its abbreviation of PPI, and any attempts to call it a poppy will be punishable.
Yes.
Do you remember when the other one was tabled and called the Protection of Information Bill, and there was total POI? We had so many information bills floating around that I said we were ending up in a fruit salad, and we'd end up with a papaya.
All right, higher in brackets, that comes out.
Maybe yes, just on a technical note, in the event. Yeah, no, all right.
Okay, just Mr. Romano's pointed out the procedural issue. I don't know why he needs to speak to him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it is a committee section issue, maybe you should.
Why does it say present?
The bill is not amended, it is redone, so it's presented.
Oh.
That's what's on the cover of our bill. I mean, it would either be as amended by the portfolio committee, in this case,
we're not amending, we are redoing the search as presented.
Okay.
So Mr. Romano then wants reports at the start. He had it from the legal and proceeding section.
So it should be
Mr. Bell presents the bill as follows.
Presents is the correct.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Right at the top,
the word reports must be replaced by presents. And the full title of the law. No, Dean, we haven't done it. The report, honourable members, as amended. All in agreement?
Yes.
Any objections? None. Thank you. Right. That finishes that.
Wow.
Yes, wow. Eight in the look. There was one item of standing that we had to deal with. Oh, yes. Judges' salaries.
Proclamation and to allow them to make the commission, as you said. I would also want to request to Mr. Delana that it would be useful to, I mean, the basic complaint seems to be a lack of consideration, but also there's this very strong point made that they are, because the public servants are getting, got a higher increase, they are now being disadvantaged, which would apply to the judges, which would apply to the councillors, which would apply to the members of parliament, etc., etc. But the magistrates are worried about that. And I think that it was I think in the answer case, they were concerned they were falling behind on inflation. What I'd like from Mr. Delano, if it's possible, is some kind of statistics as to the salary increases for magistrates over the last 10 years. My recollection is that they did get significant increases at a certain point, so it's not correct to, I think it would be useful for us in our consideration. I'm not sure, I mean, I was reading the Bertelsmann judgment, you know, he talks about failure to consider their particular circumstances may see them fall further behind other public office bearers if no particular provision was made for them. I'm not sure which other office, public office bearers he's talking about. I mean, he means public servants, I think, not other public office bearers, because all public office bearers, as opposed to public servants, got the same increase. But anyway, we can look at that when we get to it. But Chair, I then would want to suggest, because we've had no submissions on the judges, that we should approve the increase.
Approve it? Mm. Oh, the judges. Yes.
The judges.
Sorry.
So that it can take effect?
Yep.
I agree on the judges, that's fine. I mean, the magistrates, it's not as simplistic as saying that it's not the same as public servants. They also are complaining about the fact that the proportion of their pensionable salary is only 60%, whereas judges are 72.3%, which is a legitimate issue. They're also saying that the NPA very often are getting paid more than magistrates, and that seems to be a source of their concern. So I would be happy to get comparative figures as to what the increases have been. I think that's useful, and we can seek. And I would also like to compare their packages to that of judges, given that we are moving towards a single judiciary.
All right, let's do this methodically. Let's deal with the judges. And
I'm not saying they must be paid the same, but the structure of their packages, that would like.
All right, well, let's just hang on. Let's, Mr. Jeffries proposed that we accept the judge's salary. Everyone agree? Right, thank you. Okay. All of us have views about the question of the magistrates, right? And so we need to have an opportunity whereby we can express those views. I'll hear you just now, Mr. Delana. All right. Mr. Jeffrey. And anyone else?
Chair, look, I think what we should be doing at this point is really listing the further information we require, not really debating it, just to help us so we don't have to delay unnecessarily on the matter. And I've asked for an indication of their packages, I think would be probably the more appropriate word, over the past 10 years. Ms. Schaefer's then wanting the how their package is set out compared to judges. There is the issue of the the fact that judges don't pay or don't contribute to a pension fund. And then I think it also may be useful as far as if one's comparing magistrates and judges, which they seem to be doing, what are the qualifications needed to be a magistrate versus the qualifications needed to be a judge? How many magistrates have been appointed judges? If we can also get that statistic. And then I think Ms. Schaefer was also raising comparisons because the magistrates are doing it with the NPA. So can we sort of see the salary levels? Would there be
would a prosecutor be receiving less than a district court magistrate? Would a regional court prosecutor be receiving more than a regional court magistrate? I think it's Mr. Scorsano who would be probably having to provide us with that information, but Mr. De Lange can be the conduit.
Yes.
Thanks, Charles. I support the view that we need to look into the issue of the salary of the magistrate, because quite evidently there is a problem. We need to call various judges that represent magistrates, listen to them, understand what the problem is all about. We are aware that the judgment of the other matter is in their favor now, which is a step forward, but at the same time, it looks like it's not really completely dealing with the matter. And like my colleague, Honorable Shea was saying, if we're moving towards civil judiciary, we need to harmonize also the salaries and the working conditions. Indeed, the issue of pensions, we can still look at it. Those pensions are more applicable to public servants. But I do believe strongly that we need to give an ear to what the problem is, because it feels like there's a lot of problems within the area of magistrates, especially the fact that they're not working in a manner in which their remuneration is actually now being below NTA. Thank you.
Mr. J.B.
Simeone. Yes, Chairperson, I'm also aligning myself to say, under the circumstances, it would appear we should not proceed in view of the case that there is a risk decision.
Okay.
And then also, we must perhaps wait and see whether the President reconsidered and either agrees or disagrees. And then, because having been successful in the application, the effect may be similar. We may be causing a problem to say we are even ignoring the other arm of the thing, making decisions that if as we keep on a proceeding, then we keep on taking us to the court in the night. And then, Jefferson, are we going to give them an audience? Are we going to?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, that was the decision we took this morning.
Yes.
That we'll give them an audience.
Yes. I think it also assist us to hear them.
All right. I just that's a decision. So there's no. Just my question. I thought that putting the salary and benefits of magistrates in the hands of the Independent Commission is a good step.
Mm-hmm.
Takes it out of the hands of the politician.
Mm-hmm.
And so, shouldn't all these matters then have been placed before the Independent Commission?
Mm-hmm.
They should have. And so, when we give these magistrates the audience, I'd really like them to answer that question.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand why, having not succeeded with the Independent Commission, they now come rushing to you and me to say, look at those guys, they're treating us so badly. Really, I'm curious to know why these matters that you've raised now, amongst others, weren't placed before the Commission.
Or were they? In which case should we be reopened?
Well, that's the next question, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, okay, I thought we had decided earlier, but just if that we would invite the Secretary of the Commission to come and inform us whether the submissions were received and considered and the reasons for rejecting them. But I mean, maybe to point out, particularly with the Bertelsmann judgment, The judge Bosoneke, when he was chair of the commission, set up this elaborate structure where everything is linked. So the Chief Justice gets the same as the Speaker and the Chairperson of the National Council of, of Provinces and the Deputy President. And it's all been tapered down from there. Now, I know that from a number of members there was unhappiness with that, because the jump, I mean, one of the things the magistrates complain about is the jump between them and judges, and them and the Chief Justice is great. And at that point, when Judge Mosoleke made that determination, the jump between ordinary members of Parliament and ministers and the President increased. And I think they did it on the basis of the private sector, and I think at the time, the then Minister of Finance was earning, would have been better off managing the finances of the University of Cape Town than of the whole country. But the difficulty is, and where you can't really compare judges and magistrates, is politicians go up and down and up again. So you can be an ordinary member, you can become a minister, but you can become a backbencher again. And that can be, that's happened in National Parliament. It also happens when elections get lost. So Ms. Brown from the Western Cape Legislature was Premier. And you know, she's no more, and that's what happens in a democracy. With the magistrates and the judges, you don't go down. You don't become, you're not at one point the judge president, I suppose you are, but anyway, you're not going to be an ordinary judge and then a constitutional judge and then back to being an ordinary judge again. So, you know, there are things we can, what I'm trying to say is there are things we can complain about. But really, this thing of—I mean, well, look, let's debate it with the magistrates. But I think that you know, one of the advantages of having an independent commission was that you know, you then had people who could look at it dispassionately. Maybe one other thing, just a remark to make on the Bertelsmann judgment. I mean. You know, if he felt that 5% wasn't enough for magistrates, then I don't know if he was saying that 5% wasn't enough for judges and his own salary increase.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we mustn't forget the point made by Ms. Smith. It doesn't mean that because we're giving him an idea, which
no,
we agree will do,
yeah,
that now the whole thing is going to be reviewed by this committee. We don't have that authority, and really, I don't want it.
No.
You know, it's fine where it is now. Leave it there, okay? I think right at the outset we need to make clear to them that. Well,
let's hear them. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm curious to know whether they placed these things before the commission.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You see, and even we don't know. And then, of course, we're also going to hear the commission through its secretary and get an idea of how things.
We're really giving a platform of information.
Yeah.
And nothing else.
No, we are also, we will listen and we will consider.
We'll consider, but,
yeah,
you know, okay.
Not that we haven't made up our mind.
If
we feel that we have to, our powers are limited to approval or rejection. Presumably if we reject, then the President would have to reconsider,
yeah,
or we can recommend. Well, we can recommend the President
really?
Bring it back to the Commission. Yeah.
If we
reject in this committee, not the House, not the NA. If this committee rejects,
yeah, it has to be the House.
No,
it has to be the House. Yes.
Ms.
Pilar Mojaka.
Chair, I actually listening to the idea that maybe we will just listen and
yeah,
and do nothing. But at the same time, I'm thinking that if there is grievance,
mm-hmm,
and somebody reports it, just by merely making the other structure aware that it has been registered here, it will make them to actually get consent and really revisit whatever they're doing. So my suggestion would be, we listen, we're not going to change anything because it's not within our jurisdiction, but make the commission, the remuneration commission, aware that they've actually come and reported the matter to us. Just make them aware. That in itself would actually then make the exercise not to be useless, because you can just call them to come again.
Yeah, well, these are magistrates, and you know, one assumes that they're intelligent, educated people, and they should know how the system works. They should know, okay? And it was on their insistence that this thing be taken away from the politician. Now, you know.
But just to emphasize, I think rather than just leave it, that what we will be doing is hearing them. And then depending on the submissions, we can then decide what we want to do. I don't think we should now, before we've heard them, start saying...
No, I'm not saying we must preempt our...
The point is we have to recommend it or not, and we can decide not to. So it's not that we can do nothing. We can't change the Remuneration Committee, but we can say we're suggesting that the National Assembly, our recommendation as a committee, is that the National Assembly does not recommend to the President that this be approved.
Quite right, I'd like to be clear on what the consequences are of such rejection.
Well, we need to be clear before court judgment as well.
So we need to be clear before we receive these gentlemen.
The law is basically, we're not recommending to the President.
No.
The law is that the requirement is that the draft proclamation for the increases for judges and magistrates, draft proclamation for increases for judges and magistrates, must be sent to Parliament, that's both houses, for approval before they can be published. So in other words, both houses have to approve the draft proclamation that was sent.
We have
approved the judges, it will go to the House. If the NCOP approves it, then the President can publish it and it can become effective. with the magistrates, if we do not approve, then they do not get the increase. Okay?
We haven't decided.
Right. We could decide, as the Honourable esteemed Judge Bertelsmann decided, that we will approve the increase, so they get something. But we actually want the Commission and the President to consider the following factors and review it, because the effect of the Bertelsmann judgment was the 5% increase stands, but the President must reconsider possibly giving them more. So we could follow a thing, something like that. Or we could say, we can even ask the magistrates do they have suggestions, what they think we should do.
Is this judgment not binding on us, Mr. Tulan?
Actually, at this stage, I discussed this with Mr. Kusana just before the meeting.
Yes.
It would certainly be binding, but it seems like an appeal is in the offing.
Oh.
Yes. At this stage.
So, in the light thereof, if there's an appeal, then what happens? Should we not hold our decision in abeyance?
On the
matter? Yes.
Well, let's hear
it. No, I'm not saying we mustn't hear them.
Yeah.
I'm saying let's hear them.
Yeah.
We don't decide now.
Yeah.
Let's hear them, and I don't know, maybe even wait until the appeal is... They're not going to get anything until next year.
Mr. Deputy asked me informally yesterday about this issue of statistics. We did have something. I checked it with Mr. Kusana this morning. Before it wasn't sufficiently helpful, so we will be coming back with a more comprehensive issue. And then just lastly, he is in the NCOP is meeting on the same issue right at this moment. And he will attempt to steer the committee to adopt the same approach that you have.
That one there.
They're busy right now, as far as I understand. And my colleague is trying to steer them in that direction, but it doesn't sound like too successfully, so maybe you need to give them a call quick.
I don't think it would make any difference in the end. I agree that we will also see that they've got this comparison between the magistrates and the prosecutors, since the deal apparently held in some circles that they are officially subservient to the
Look at page 29 and just explain this to me, Mr. Jeffrey, as well. It refers to the increase the remuneration of regional magistrates, regional court presidents,
effect from 1 April. I wish they wouldn't use 1 April, but they do. 2010.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, the other interesting thing is only regional court magistrates, regional court president. It doesn't affect the other magistrates. There's no authority for the president to review his own decision.
No, but that's because the organization I took him to court was only representing regional magistrates.
The net result.
Yeah, but it can be implied.
All right. Then we're done, Mr. Ramadan. Thank you very much.
Next week, Tuesday.
Sorry, just hold on.
Yeah, I'm not sure.